KQED.
From KQED Public Radio, this is Forum. I'm Scott Schaefer, here today for Dave Iverson. In this hour of Forum, a week and a half after the presidential primary, about a million ballots are yet to be counted in California. And in Los Angeles, thousands of votes from independent voters won't be counted at all. You might think holding a clean, fair election might be a pretty straightforward thing, but it's more complicated than it seems. We'll explore some of the reasons why that's true, how the Florida debacle of the 2000 presidential election continues to haunt California, and what, if anything, might change between now and the November election. All that plus your phone calls in the next hour of Forum, right after this. And welcome once again to Forum. I'm Scott Schaefer, and today for Dave Iverson. Well, you may think the February 5th presidential primary in California is over, but in a way, it isn't. That's because there are still a million votes uncounted, mostly mail-in ballots that arrived on or just before Election Day, and provisional ballots that are still being verified. Most of those ballots will eventually be counted, but in Los Angeles, there's another kind of problem that won't be so easy to fix and will probably result in thousands of voters' ballots being tossed out, not counted. Joining us to talk about the lingering problems from last week's election is our Secretary of State, Deborah Bowen, who joins us from Sacramento, I believe. Secretary Bowen, welcome to Forum.
Good morning.
First of all, if you would, give us a bit of an overview of that election, February 5th, on a statewide basis. Am I correct? There are about a million ballots still uncounted. And where are they pretty well distributed throughout the state? Where are they?
Well, my most recent tally tells me there are 782,052 ballots still uncounted. And as you might expect, most of them are in the largest counties, so Los Angeles, Riverside, Fresno, and then because Sacramento had an equipment change, there are many uncounted ballots still in Sacramento.
And how unusual is it this many days, 10 days after an election, to have this many ballots still uncounted?
Well, you know, this is my first statewide election, but it has to be unusual because of a number of factors, and the most important one here is that with the presidential primary so early in California, earlier than it's ever been in our history and at a time when it really mattered, and with the fields in both the Republican and Democratic primaries in flux until almost the last minute, we had an enormous number of voters voting by mail who delivered their ballots to the polling place on Election Day. And we had an enormous increase yet again in vote-by-mail ballots. So these two things combined mean that we would expect to see many ballots being counted after the close of the polls on Election Day.
And so if they come in on Election Day, they cannot be counted on Election Day. They have to be set aside in a pile and then dealt with after the election.
Right. And so that listeners understand why, in order to prevent fraud, the vote-by-mail ballots actually undergo a signature verification. The signature on the ballot, excuse me, as compared to the signature on the voter registration card. Then the envelope is opened, the ballots set aside for processing, and then those ballots that have been opened are processed as a ballot on Election Day would be. No one knows at that point which ballot belongs to which voter.
And just so our listeners know, the state always gets about 28 days, I believe, to certify an election, so this is not like totally unusual.
No, and some counties always take every minute. San Francisco generally takes the full 28 days.
Let's go to Los Angeles, where there's a different kind of problem or a complicating problem, and that has to do with people who were registered as declined to state. They weren't affiliated with either party. They were allowed to vote in the Democratic primary. They had to ask for either a Democrat or independent party ballot. Why are so many of those voters potentially being disenfranchised? Why are their votes potentially not going to count?
Well, the heart of that is a ballot design issue. But I also want to point out that we have an enormous number of declined to state voters. Again, a big increase in the last few election cycles of declined to state voters. It's now 19.66% of the electorate. And a decade ago, it was, you know, just a minuscule number of voters. So those voters could vote in either the Democratic or American Independent Party primary, and I want to draw a distinction so that voters who are going to register understand that there's a difference between the American Independent Party and being a declined to state voter. That's a perennial problem. But what happened was LA County used a ballot design that assigned the same numbers to the Democratic primary and the American Independent primary. And the computer, or a person visually inspecting the ballot, can only tell which race the DTS, declined to state voter, intended to vote in, if another bubble, it's been being called the double bubble, is filled in.
And so they had to both say which candidate they wanted, but also which party.
That's right. So just to give an example, because this is hard to understand without seeing the ballot, the rotation order varies, so you don't have the same person in first. But in an area where Joe Biden was the first Democratic candidate on the ballot, a gentleman named Mad Max Rixey was the first American Independent Party candidate. That was bubble number 8. A voter, a declined to state voter who filled in bubble number 8, we don't know unless they filled in bubble number 5 or 6 for the Democratic or American Independent Party column, whether they intended to vote for Joe Biden or Mad Max Rixey. So a visual inspection of these ballots alone will not tell us which primary and which candidate the voter intended to cast a ballot in.
What more can be done? You say just a quick visual inspection. Is there anything else that can be done?
Yes. I've asked Los Angeles County to do a precinct-by-precinct reconciliation of the roster that is used when voters sign in. And here's the scenario I imagine. Let's say that there were 5 declined-to-state voters in a particular precinct, and they all asked for Democratic Party ballots. This would not be surprising. I don't think we actually had a lot of people requesting American Independent Party ballots. If that happens, and in that same precinct you find 5 voters who voted, 5 declined-to-state voters who did not fill in the 5 or the 6 bubble, so we don't know which primary it is then safe to assume that they all intended to vote in the Democratic primary because you didn't have anyone request an American Independent Party ballot in that precinct. I think if we do that, if Los Angeles County does that, they may well be able to count many of these otherwise uncountable ballots.
Now, it turns out that this was the 3rd election where this particular ballot design was used, and apparently the county knew that the ballot was systematically not counting thousands of votes of declined to state voters if they didn't fill in that second bubble. So it raises the question, why didn't they fix it before a 3rd election, especially one that was so powerful and popular to participate in?
Yeah, well, I certainly wasn't aware of this. The ballot design is done at the county level. I have recently learned that in some states, the Secretary of State is required to approve the ballot design, but that is not true in California. The ballot design was created by the previous registrar of voters. So the current registrar, acting registrar in LA County, inherited this problem. And he's relatively new. I don't know whether he was aware that voters were being systematically excluded. I was shocked to hear it, frankly.
Part of the problem, of course, is that after Florida 2000, the punch card ballots were by and large thrown out, and there was a rush toward a different kind of technology. Originally, it was touchscreen machines. Now those are in question. You last year decertified most of the touchscreen machines in California. So there's been a lot of confusion at the county level. So in a way, it's not entirely their fault that they're in this kind of limbo with their equipment. Is that right?
Well, Los Angeles did something very unusual. I don't think anyone else in the country, maybe one county in Missouri, did this. They took the old punch screen equipment and fitted it so that rather than having the voter punch out a hole in the card, the same equipment was used and a little stamper was used, basically a stylus with a marker on the end, so that the voter would make a mark on the ballot through the holes that had been previously used for the punch card. I don't think they had any confusion about the equipment. That's what they chose to do. I believe that the ballot design was an attempt to save money. I actually am fairly astonished that they didn't anticipate the potential for trouble, given that the nation's eyes had been on ballot design just in the previous election cycle. This ballot design happened in 2002, as I understand things.
So is it fair to say we won't see that ballot design in June or November?
It is fair to say we will not see that ballot design again anywhere in California in any election.
All right. Anything you'd like to add before we let you go?
Well, I think it will be interesting to find out more from your next guest about where the ballots are still uncounted. I have the numbers on a county-by-county basis, but I can't tell you exactly what is going on. And there are lessons there for how we handle elections in June and in November, although to some extent this problem of people holding on to their ballots I'm sure is exacerbated in an early presidential primary where the field is in flux and voters are, for very good reason, deciding not to decide until they know who's actually going to be still in the race.
Is there damage to be fixed here with voters? Because it seems we've given a mixed message. On the one hand, we encourage, in your office, encourages everyone to vote. And then in Los Angeles, we find out that declined estate voters, tens of thousands of them, won't have their votes counted, even though they bothered to turn out.
Well, I don't think we will have tens of thousands of votes go uncounted. Again, I think that logic tells us that there are most of the declined estate voters who requested a crossover ballot requested a Democratic Party ballot. We will do an analysis, but, you know, if we have in the county 100 people who requested an American Independent Party ballot, I will buy you lunch.
Okay, well, we'll make a note of that.
So all right. I think that means that we will actually be able to count those ballots on most of them. But we certainly have some work to do, not just in looking at the results of this election and seeing what lessons we can learn, but I think more systematically looking at the results of all election processes. And my goal as Secretary of State, and the reason that we moved away from touchscreen voting machines, is I want to learn from the mistakes of other jurisdictions. They had problems with touchscreens. They had vote flipping. They had lost memory cards. Let's not have those problems. It's just like doing levee repair work. We also need to do that within California. Do an analysis of what happened in every county, and then have every single county learn from it, and we will, in that way, always have a better election the next time.
Is it fair to say that states, including California, maybe overreacted or acted too quickly after the Florida debacle in 2000, before we really knew what to do, what was the right thing to do?
You know, I actually think they were pushed by the Congress with the Help America Vote Act, which, and they also, counties don't have the ability to do the kind of systematic computer analysis that I did in my top-to-bottom review of voting systems. There would have been no way for counties contemplating a purchase of an electronic voting system to know about the security problems, the hackability problems, the accuracy problems. They were really relying on salespeople. So the entire certification system needs work, and that's happening as we speak, too, at the federal level. So it's not so simple as to just find one party and pin the tail on that particular donkey.
Or elephant.
Or elephant, thank you.
Okay. Deborah Bowen, California's Secretary of State, thanks so much for joining us this morning.
My pleasure.
And joining us now, Steve Weir. He's president of the California Association of Clerks and Election Officials. He's also the election chief in Contra Costa County. Steve Weir, good morning to you.
Good morning.
Also with us from Southern California, Rick Hassan, a professor of law at Loyola Law School in Los Angeles. Rick, thanks for being with us.
Good morning.
And we're also expecting Kim Weir to be with us from the California Voter Foundation. Kim Alexander, rather, from the California Voter Foundation. We'll let you know when she joins us. Kim, you're here. Good morning.
I'm here.
Okay, I know we had to jump through some hoops to get you here, so thanks for joining us. Let me begin with you, Steve Weir. You just heard Deborah Bowen describing what's being done in Los Angeles to make sure that as many declined estate ballots are counted. Do you have any concerns about what she's asking that county to do?
Not really, but I think I'm going to ask for turkey on rye. The secretary indicated, and she did a nice job of this, by the way, that she would doubt that there's more than 100 people asking for the American Independent. I'm going to guess that it's much higher than that, and I would hope that she's correct, that very few did. In that way, by going through the roster, by identifying those declined estate folks who asked for a Democratic ballot, if there were no American Independent, you could make the rebuttable presumption that those are, in fact, Democratic ballots, and I think a court would agree if it was challenged. But they won't know until they go through the rosters and do that activity. Unfortunately, many view the American Independent as an independence ballot, and we find that they ask for it both by mail and at the polls, and sometimes look at it and go, "Whoops, this isn't what we wanted," and so they'll back away from voting that ballot. I also noticed a very high undervote for American Independence. So it's also possible, and I don't know how to get to that part of it, that the voter could have requested that ballot and simply not voted that ballot. In that case as well, there's a rebuttable presumption that even if there's only one American Independent, it's possible that they made that choice.
And so when you say you're going to have a turkey on rye, you mean that there are going to be quite a few more votes than that are not counted?
You know, I'm guessing. Well, what the secretary said was she was betting that there aren't more than 100 who had requested American Independent at the polling places. And there are, you know, 4,000-plus polling precincts in Los Angeles County. And Los Angeles County, to their credit, is the highest vote at the precinct county in the state. They don't have the highest turnout, but they have the lowest vote by mail. So those folks that are voting are doing so at the polls, and the opportunity to either correctly select or accidentally select an American Independent ballot is, I think, going to be higher if that analysis is done.
Rick Hassan, as you look at the situation in Los Angeles and listen to the secretary, what is it that what jumps out for you? What are the most important questions this raises?
Well, you know, we're always putting out the last fire, and it's too bad that that there isn't a statewide review or something else in place to make sure that these problems are caught before they cause a major problem. And I think the reason that no one paid attention before is that California's presidential primary votes never really mattered before, and so now that things matter, people are paying attention. And I'm much less optimistic than the secretary is that there is going to be a way to count most of these 50,000 votes.
Do you think we've gotten kind of lackadaisical?
Oh, no, I don't think it's that. I don't think it's that at all. I think that election officials are working very hard. It's that we have so much change. And so the reason that we're voting on this Inca vote system in Los Angeles is that there was a lawsuit to prevent the use of punch card ballots in California, which Secretary of State Jones at the time settled and agreed to phase out those ballots by 2004. And Connie McCormack, who was the registrar recorder in Los Angeles, I think wisely decided to wait a while before making a major purchase of touchscreen machines or other machines. But they needed something in the interim, and the interim is this Inca vote system, which itself is somewhat problematic. And so I think this is partly growing pains, and some of these problems are unavoidable. But I do think that the ballot design issue, anyone spending 5 minutes looking at it, at least in hindsight, would see how confusing this is, especially because, as Mr. Weir pointed out, so many voters are confused by the American Independent Party being on the ballot and thinking that's what they are, they're independent. And I would guess that the reason that the American Independent Party still qualifies on the ballot, the only reason that it still qualifies is because new registrants check that box, thinking they're checking a box as an independent. So it's a bunch of things working together, but I certainly don't think it's laziness on the part of election officials who have a very tough job and work very hard at it.
That's Rick Hassan, professor of law at Loyola Law School in Los Angeles. Also with us, Steve Weir, president of the California Association of Clerks and Election Officials, and Kim Alexander, president of the California Voter Foundation. Steve Weir, we have had, I think, in the last 5 years, four secretaries of state: Bill Jones, Bruce McPherson, Kevin Shelley, and now Deborah Bowen. What kind of problems? You have two Republicans, two Democrats, different approaches to these kinds of questions. What kinds of problems does that create for local election officials?
Well, I don't want to suggest it's a partisan issue. I do have the feeling, though, that in California and actually across the country, secretaries have a little more unilateral power than perhaps they should. My sense is that there ought to be a little more of a check and balance on Secretary of State's being able to change voting systems. And I've said this before, so quickly before an election, 6 months isn't enough time. That's sort of an emergency issue, but I don't think the emergency existed. But I think we want to get beyond that. I think that we've now gotten through a major election. We've seen some of the bumps in the road that we knew about. We're seeing some of the bumps that we didn't know about. We don't have a lot of time until the next primary that, by the way, allows crossover. And then we go immediately, 154 days later, into the biggest election that I think most people in this state will ever face. And certainly for registrars, this is going to be an enormous election and big turnout, lots and lots of of folks wanting to vote at the polls and by mail. And I will hope that by then we've honed these issues of voting systems.
Kim Alexander, the declined estate portion of the electorate is growing. The Democrat and Republican portions is shrinking as a percentage. And yet it kind of seems that declined estate voters are second-class citizens in a way. They couldn't vote in the Republican primary, and we saw all the hurdles they had to go through to vote as Democrats or independent party voters. Why is that the case, and should it be that way?
There's no doubt that L.A. County's declined estate voters have been treated like second-class citizens. This problem has existed for three statewide elections. There's been a significant undervote for declined estate voters who attempted to vote a partisan ballot, and it's just not acceptable. I think one of the problems is that declined estate voters are orphans in the electoral process. They have no party to represent them. You know, at the statewide legislative level, everybody who sits in the legislature is either a Democrat or a Republican. And while they, you know, in theory represent all the constituents in their district, they're very mindful, they're most mindful of representing the constituents and the people of their party and the interests of their party. So declined estate voters have poor representation just by definition.
And so do you're saying the major parties really don't care about those voters?
I think they would be foolish not to care, because this is the fastest growing electorate. This is where young voters are flocking to. So I think that, you know, it's just not in the mix right now. I think what needs to happen, I mean, and that's why I think this whole situation is so heartbreaking. I mean, I went back and looked at the numbers to see how serious this problem has been in the past. And we are talking about 59,000 uncounted votes in the June 2006 primary. We're talking about 78,000 uncounted votes in L.A. County in the 2004 presidential primary election. And I don't think that it's only 50,000 in this election. I think that that number is being lowballed. I think it's probably more like half of the votes that were cast were uncounted. And the county went into this election knowing that there was a ballot design problem and knowing there was a good chance that more than half the voters would not mark their ballots correctly and would end up being disenfranchised. And we're talking about systematic disenfranchisement of an entire class of voters in the largest county in the state and in the country.
Rick Aston, what do you think should be done or could be done to make it easier for declined estate voters not only to vote, but for their vote to be counted?
Well, a couple of things. One is, in San Francisco, for example, if you were a declined estate voter and you wanted to vote in the Democratic primary, you were just given a Democratic ballot. I mean, there are a number of very simple technological solutions to the problem of what happened in L.A., so that can be avoided. I do think there has to be better public education about what declined estate voters can do, which parties they can cast primary votes in and which they can't. I think that's part of it. And I, as we were talking, I just looked up the statistics. There were 5,400 people who voted for an American independent candidate in the last primary season. So we may all be getting sandwiches from Secretary Biden.
Well, I don't know about you, but I'm going for prime rib.
Yeah, it's
quickly, very quickly. Steve Weir.
You know, there's an answer to your question about do the parties care. Actually, they don't. We had the blanket primary. Some called it open, but the blanket primary in this state, and it was an absolute marvelous opportunity for folks to participate in the primary, and the parties shut it down.
All right, we'll tell you what. We're going to come back with that point. We've got to take a break. Steve Weir from the California Association of Clerks and Election Officials. Also, Kim Alexander from the California Voter Foundation. And we're going to say goodbye to Rick Hassan from Loyola Law School. Thanks for joining us. And if you want to participate in our discussion, it's 866-733-6786. Again, that number, 866-733-6786. And welcome back to Forum. I'm Scott Schaefer here today for Dave Iverson. And we're talking about California's primary election. It's over a week old, but the votes are still not counted. About a million or maybe about 800,000 now left to be counted, and some problems in Los Angeles raising lots of questions. Our guests for the remaining part of the hour, Kim Alexander, president of the California Voter Foundation, and Steve Weir. He's the chief election official in Contra Costa County and also president of the California Association of Clerks and Election Officials. And Steve, before the break, you were talking about the open primary, which California voters approved several years ago, and the parties found something they could agree on, the Democratic and Republican parties, and they went to court and shut it down. What does that tell you about the kind of problems we're having in Los Angeles with declined estate voters and more generally with holding elections here in California?
Well, I think that many voters in the state of California want options and don't want to be tied to a party. And I think that Kim's pointed out that the Klein to State's the fastest growing party. And in the Bay Area and in some Southern California areas, it's growing faster than the rest of the state. The blanket primary permitted everyone to get the same ballot. The Democrats and Republicans fought that successfully because they have the right of freedom of association. But they were concerned about alienating that growing population. So they kind of fudged to say, well, we'll decide whether they can participate or not in these primaries, and we'll choose which parties they can participate in. And for registrars, that does create a ballot issue. Look, many people claim that we should have seen this coming, except that we're ordering our ballots 90 and sometimes 60 days before an election, and this so-called surge started to look like it was taking on some kind of a life in the last week of the election. Unfortunately, LA has what's tantamount to a punch card system, but instead of using a punch, which can give you all of those pregnant and dimpled chads, they use an inking device that doesn't give you the ambiguity that you see with the punch cards. And they chose to have sort of a crossover ballot that could be used in the polling places and did require the voter to mark that party. Obviously, that didn't work.
Kim Alexander, might there be another run at a kind of open primary system, or has it been settled by the courts and the parties just don't have to go along with it if they don't want to?
It has been pretty firmly settled in the courts. And, you know, I think that after this experience, there's got to be a lot of decline to state voters in L.A. who are thinking maybe, you know, they just can't get the voting rights that they deserve as decline to state voters. I mean, this is a good marketing device, I guess, in some ways for the parties to get people to stop registering to decline to state, because these voters are being routinely disenfranchised. And it's not just about the double bubble problem in L.A. It's the fact that if you're a decline to state voter, you have to speak up and ask for a partisan ballot if you want one. Poll workers will not automatically tell you. And a lot of voters make a mistake when they vote in the primary. They go in, they just take the ballot the poll worker gives them, and they vote that ballot, not realizing that there are partisan contests missing from it, because often there's so many contests on the ballot, it's hard to notice what's not there.
And Steve Weir, to what extent do the poll workers sometimes not really know what the rules are and may make it even harder than they should for a decline to state voter to cast a ballot?
You know, let me just, and I'm not a sociologist, but let me just indicate what we've heard. In any group, if you teach a group of people a set skills, 5% of them are going to have problems with it. If you repeat that set skill, they'll start to improve. But with each election, we're probably witnessing between a 25 and 33% changeover in poll workers. So number one, you're trying to teach them the skill sets. Number two, we've not conducted a primary in this state the same way in the last 8 primary elections. And by the way, the one in June will be different. If you're trying to teach the poll workers a changed skill set and introducing new poll workers, there's a chance that they're going to start to get it wrong. I found it in my own county when our poll workers, having been told that crossover voting was permitted, were not permitting voters to have a ballot, even if they insisted. Now, we found them, we changed that, but my own folks who went through training, the training was real clear, we had a percent at the beginning of the day miss it. And I will bet you the dollars to donuts or the lunch or whatever that you want, that was happening all over the state.
Would it help to post the rules so that an alert voter can say, well, wait a minute, Ooh. Look, here are my rights?
You know, I think Kim could tell you this, or anyone that goes to the polls, we already post an enormous amount of material. And I don't want to say it's overkill, but if you go into a polling place, if they have everything posted that's required, it looks like you're papering a wall with different documents. This one's a toughie. This one's going to be tough because you're trying to tell 20% of the voters in this state that they've got a different set of rules at each primary.
All right. Well, we've got a lot of voters who want to talk, and let's start with Scott in San Francisco. Hi, Scott.
Good morning. Had a question about the decline to state and whether it's possible at all to verify on an individual basis whether, in my case, my vote as a decline to state voter actually counted or not. And I guess just a second question to the panel. As far as I understand, the statistics in Northern California gave the election to Senator Obama, whereas in Southern California, it went for Clinton. And when we have problems as sounds like widespread as they are in Southern California, does this not call into question the votes from the largest state in the union?
Let's start with the first question first. Kim Alexander, let me ask you, Steve Weir.
Actually, I'd like to answer the second one.
Okay, but first the question of tracking ballots. Sure. Steve Weir, once a ballot is submitted, you can't really follow it and connect it to a person, right?
You know, you can't, but here's what you can do. If you vote at the polls, we're required to enter which voter voted, and that ballot cast at the polls is going to be counted, and so you can know that. If you're a vote-by-mail voter, you can know that by calling in, because we have to credit that specific voter with that specific ballot. And even the provisional voter can know whether their ballot's counted, and actually it's easier for them because the provisional voter is given a stub with a number that they can then go to a website and see if that ballot was counted. And so a voter can know, but there's no way, and I hope folks understand this, there's no way that you can actually trace back through this electronic process some kind of confirmation that your actual vote was counted and in the manner in which you cast it. That would be way too vulnerable for a so-called vote selling.
And Kim Alexander, to Scott's other point about Obama and the differences in, throughout the state.
Well, there has been some dispute about whether these uncounted votes in L.A., this 50,000 to, I think, up to 90,000 uncounted votes in L.A., would affect the delegate count for California. And I think there is a very real possibility that it could. We've looked at the numbers. There are 18 congressional districts that are located wholly or in part in Los Angeles. And the Democratic Party awards delegate votes on a proportional basis by congressional district. And so it's not a winner-take-all system. If those votes were to lean more one way or another, it could. And the conventional wisdom is that the declined to state voters who showed up at the polls in L.A. and voted a partisan Democratic ballot on Election Day were voting for Obama. I don't know if that's true or not, but that's what folks out there are saying. If that is true, and we're talking 50 to 90,000 votes, then yes, it could impact the delegate count. And that's why we really need to count them. And the other reason we need to count them is because there are serious questions of malfeasance here. There's a real problem that the county went into this election knowing there was a good chance that many voters would overlook the need to mark the second ballot. There's nothing intuitive about doing that. You've requested to vote a Democratic ballot. You've been directed to a Democratic booth. You only see the Democratic candidates' names in that booth. So it's understandable why voters would overlook making that second mark and why this has been a perennial problem. And I think that, you know, we need a full accounting of all those ballots to see if they did favor one candidate or another, because that would make a difference in whether this is a case of malfeasance.
Have you heard anything, any talk about a lawsuit, perhaps by the Obama campaign against the vote count in Los Angeles?
Well, the Obama campaign, last I heard, is backing off of that. But there's an organization down in L.A. called the Courage Campaign that's online at couragecampaign.org. And right now they are having a news conference in front of Acting Registrar Dean Logan's office, delivering 31,000 petitions that people have signed on their website. They've collected the names of 500 voters in Los Angeles who believe they were disenfranchised. And I think that there could very likely be a lawsuit if these votes don't get counted. And let's make something clear. I mean, this is not a proposition votes that are on the line, whether we're going to have a law enacted or not. These are delegate votes that are being given to, as Steve Weir said, you know, this is a private political association, the Democratic Party. Some of these ballots, we can be, if we hand counted them, we could be 100% certain what the voter intent was. Some of them, if we hand counted them, we could be 90% certain. Some we could be 80% certain. Let's count them all to whatever degree of certainty we can, give those results to a court or to the parties, and let them decide what to do with them. But at least let people see their vote show up somewhere. That's what voters want. They want to know that they voted, and somewhere along the line, their vote got counted.
And we go back to the phones now in Berkeley. Gideon is on the line. Welcome to the show.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I know that the polls in Alameda County were among the last polls in the state to close, and that was because a judge ordered them to stay open until 10 p.m. due to the fact that multiple precincts in Oakland and Berkeley ran out of ballots. How much information do you have about this? And how can this be excused when, you know, California knew that every other state that voted before us had unprecedented turnout?
Well, I think there was some confusion, was there not, Steve Weir, about whether that judge actually ordered the polls to stay open until 10. I know that was reported, but I later heard that, in fact, they were just kept open to allow everyone who was in line at 8 o'clock to vote. What do you know about that?
Well, there were two judges involved in this. Usually there's always a judge on standby to deal with elections officials' issues or the public's. And unfortunately, another judge entered into this issue and said, I'm going to advise you to keep your polls open, and I advise the county council to tell the registrar to keep the polls open. And so there was an advisory issue saying keep the polls open, and then another judge who was on call was brought into this, and they said, you know, I don't see it. So ultimately the spin, and that's what it turned out to be, was, well, anyone who was in line at 8 o'clock can be permitted to vote up to 10, when in fact anyone who's in line anywhere has the right to vote, even if it takes 4 hours. Those polls are open until those voters have voted. So there was some confusion. You know, the more base issue, I think, evolves around ballot ordering, and maybe that's something we should discuss.
Well, and what about that? Gideon's point that it was very clear, not just from the early returns from other parts of the country, but for weeks now we've been seeing these massive turnouts. How can a precinct run out of ballots?
Well, if I could explain as succinctly as I can, we're ordering our ballots 90 days out. So sometime in October and November, you're ordering your ballots. And what you do is you run the registration for that precinct. You run it by party. You subtract out the permanent absentees because they most likely don't go to the polls. And then you always round up. And so every registrar is ordering more than 100% ballots. And in even a decent turnout election, that shouldn't affect this. What we found out was in those areas, and let's face it, folks, it's the Bay Area, that tend to be more Democratic and have very high decline to states. Remember, it's 20% on average in the state, but San Francisco's 30, Alameda's in the 20s, so is Santa Clara. If someone was paying attention and went to the secretary's website, you'd say, hey, where are the Democratic counties? Here they are. Where are the decline to state counties? Here they are. You have to run another order sheet that says, wait a minute, if decline to states in specific precincts are high, shouldn't you address those? And in fact, we should. Many didn't, and I put out a circular for folks to add that to their ordering process. Most counties were able to be successful with this, and we came close, like 4 hours close, not close, to having two polling places potentially run out.
Yeah.
We did a risk assessment, and were able to cover those.
Kim Alexander, anything to add to that?
Well, the other thing that happened with this election, we did have a very, very high rate of interest and participation, and we also had a high number of voters request vote-by-mail ballots. And a lot of those voters request them, and they don't show up, or they misplace them, or, you know, for whatever reason, those ballots go missing, and then they show up at the polls, and they want to still vote, and they're given a provisional ballot to vote. And there was a very high, I understand, a pretty high rate of provisional voting. So when you have our office was just slammed with phone calls for 2 days from people saying, hey, I don't know if I'm registered. Should I still go and vote? So a lot of people who were unsure of their registration status were showing up at the polls to vote, and they all get to vote. They all get to vote provisional ballots. They may not get counted, but I'm sure that also taxed the supply of ballots available.
All right, Gideon, thanks for the call. Let's go now to Sonoma, and Joanne is on the line. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Scott, Kim, and Steve. We haven't talked much that there is another primary coming up in June, and I think there needs to be some clarification about the decline to state who can vote in the June primary for congressional candidates and state assembly and Senate candidates. What's going to happen with these decline to state in the June primary?
Kim Alexander?
That's a great question, and you know, I think L.A. County has got to look at buying a new voting system. I have never been a fan of the Inca Vote system. It's a real problem because you cannot discern voter intent just by looking at the ballot because the candidate's name doesn't appear on the ballot, and I realize that that ballot style makes sense from an administrative perspective for L.A. County, but it makes it much more difficult for voters to verify their votes, and that's why we've continued to see an undervote problem for all voters in L.A., even with the elimination of punch cards because they've continued with this ballot style. But I don't think it's likely that the county can move to a regular optical scan paper ballot, such as the kind that the rest of us are voting on throughout the state that has the candidates' names on it. I don't think that's going to happen by June. One suggestion that I heard that I thought was pretty good was that if you have a crossover voter who can vote in the Democratic or the Republican primary election, it's possible that the poll worker could pre-mark that extra bubble, you know, if they've still got this ballot design, you know, pre-mark the ballot for the voter so that they don't have to mark that extra bubble. I don't know if that would be lawful, but that's one possibility.
Of course, it also raises that question of training and adding one more thing for a poll worker to do, Steve Weir.
Let me jump in if I could. Number one, the parties have to tell the Secretary of State, I think 113 days before an election, who can participate in their election for the June 3rd primary. The Republicans have joined the Democrats and the American Independents to allow crossover. Look, I've talked to Dean Logan, the acting director, about this, and what they do in L.A. is they pre-mark their party ballots because it's a Scantron. I mean, as Kim has said, there's no actual verbiage on there that gives you contest or candidates. So they pre-mark that. So it's the same ballot for a Democrat and Republican, but it's pre-marked so that the machine knows that that was a Democratic ballot or a Republican ballot. What Logan's going to do is have those pre-marked because you don't want to rely upon the poll worker. I know what's going to happen if you rely upon the poll worker. They're going to have more ballot types. It's just as simple as that.
A question from Doug in Menlo Park. He writes, I have a question about the way mail-in ballots are validated. If the signature is questionable, is the ballot simply rejected, or is the voter contacted before his or her vote is discarded? Steve Weir?
Good question. Election Code Section 3000, which deals with vote by mail, says this division shall be liberally construed in favor of the voter. So every registrar in the state is trying to allow that voter to vote, not to disqualify the voter. But there are three issues with vote by mail ballots. Number one, the ones that come in late can't be counted. Late is anything after 8 o'clock election night. Number two, any ballot that doesn't have a signature at all can't be counted. Registrars try to get back in touch with that voter, but there are still ballots that can't be counted. Number three, where you look at that signature and in no way does it approximate the actual signature of the voter on their registration card. If you looked at 100 and you weren't a pro at this, you could easily pick out 99 as having matched that voter's signature. But in the last 1%, there is a fraction of those that it just doesn't match. And those can't be counted. And no, the voter's not notified.
And there is a California is what's called a voter intent state, I believe, which means what exactly?
Well, in California, we define what a vote is ahead of time. In Florida in 2000, they did not define what a vote was ahead of time. California has a much more progressive law. You'll never see me holding a ballot up to the light to see if I can discern voter intent. We define what that is. And if, in fact, you voted for one candidate and you crossed it out, not initialing it, crossed it out and voted for another candidate, when we see that ballot, and we will, we're able to discern voter intent and we can award that vote to the candidate you intended to vote for.
Unless you voted in Los Angeles.
You know, the Los Angeles case is going to be a problem because I know reviewing those ballots, it's going to be very difficult for them unless, as the Secretary said, they're lucky enough in some precincts not to have any American independent crossover voters. They're going to have a real problem with that. Here's the exception. If someone wrote on that ballot Democrat, or if they wrote American independent.
But Steve, couldn't they?
Kim, go ahead.
Couldn't we look at what the crossover rate was for American independent voters in past elections, either in LA or statewide, and say, well, you know, about one, even if they cross over by mistake, you know, we know 1 or 2% of the crossover votes in those elections went to American Independent Party candidates. And we could still count those ballots, building that into the equation and come up with an, you know, 80 or 90% level of confidence and accuracy.
Quick comment, Steve, then we're going to go to calls.
But you can't, because there are 25 assembly districts in that county, and that means there's 25 different rotations on those ballots for the Democratic Party. With 8 candidates, they're rotating all over the place. In any given precinct, that means 3 of those Democratic votes are being masked by a potential vote for an American independent candidate. I do not see a way out of this aside from what the Secretary suggested. And unfortunately, you know, I think that's what it's going to be.
All right, see, we're going to leave it there and go to another call. Cindy is on the line in Oakland. Hi, Cindy.
Hi. I wanted to ask a question about what to do if the voter has requested a ballot be sent to a different address. My daughter goes to college in New Jersey. She did whatever she was supposed to do by faxing to Alameda County voter registrar. They didn't send it to her, so she called them again. They assured her it would get there in time to come back if she sent it very quickly. It arrived Monday night,
yeah.
50 minutes after the post office closed.
And Steve, it has to be more than just postmarked, doesn't it?
Yes, it has to be physically in our hands, either at a polling place or at the registrar's office. Look, this is tragic. A person can keep their registration and be in college or be reassigned for work. and ask their ballot to be mailed to another place, and invariably there are going to be some that don't make it. Federal Express and overnight mail can work, but in this state, we don't permit postmarks to be used to authenticate a timely delivery of a ballot.
Cindy, maybe your daughter can re-register in New Jersey for November.
Perhaps. Well, she called the Secretary of State's office because she's majoring in politics, and they told her they weren't in charge of it.
Okay. Well,
but we are sorry for that.
Yeah. All right. Thanks for the call. Let's go now to Carrie, who's on the line. Hi, Carrie.
Hi. I just wanted to comment, and then I have a question. I was the inspector at my polling place here in San Francisco for on Super Tuesday, and I just there's been a lot of conversation about training and poll workers and that sort of thing. We were very, very proactive in when we had declined estate voters coming in, asking them what kind, explaining to them what their rights were, and asking them what kind of ballot they wanted. We had a good number of absentee voters who came in and brought their absentee ballots in because they had gotten a nonpartisan ballot in the mail and they wanted to vote in the Democratic primary, so they surrendered the ballot and we let them vote then in the Democratic primary. There was actually quite a bit of confusion, or a fair amount of confusion, about people who are actually registered with the American Independent Party. That was mentioned earlier, that people kind of equated independent and American Independent Party. So we did have a few people who came in who were registered with the American Independent Party who thought they could vote in the Democratic primary, which of course they could not.
Steve Weir, is that not a problem in other states where there's some confusion between declined estate and independent party, the American Independent Party?
You know, I can't tell you about the other states, but I wholeheartedly agree that it's true here. If you look at the undervotes in Contra Costa County for the American Independent Party, and if you look at the write-ins for the American Independent Party, they are almost three times what the actual vote was for American Independent candidates. And I think those are voters going in thinking that they get an independent ballot, and they're going, uh-oh. And they vote.
Yeah,
they,
this is a
they vote the ballot.
This is
and
a
they,
big problem.
Yeah, Kim.
And actually, I just want to mention I'm on a task force that the Secretary of State Deborah Bowen convened earlier, I guess actually last year, and we are working on redesigning the state voter registration card. And this issue is something that we're looking at, trying to make it clear on the card that that you can either vote to be a member of a party or vote to or register to not be a member of a party. I think that we could make some improvements in the way the form is laid out.
All right, let's go back to the phones now. Lynn is on the line in Oakland. Richard, rather, in Pengrove. Hi, Richard.
Hi, yes. I just wanted to make a comment and that I've been a poll worker several times before. I couldn't this past election. My wife was in fact there voting with me that morning and witnessed that when she got her ballot, which had she had been mis-signed up as an American independent, she was informed wrongly that she couldn't vote in the
Democratic primary.
Right. And I was off doing my own thing, and I didn't find this out until after. She marked her ballot, which was just about the propositions, and put it in the box. And, of course, once it goes in the box, it can't come out again. I understand, being a poll worker, how difficult it is to get all the rules and regs right and so on. But I did have to go through the head poll worker there, and then also call in myself to.
Yeah. So you really had to go through a bunch of extra hoops to get
a lot
get
of the, stuff.
Yeah, Steve Weir, is there anything, any advice you have for people who are either registered, declined to state, or for poll workers, or people who are thinking about poll workers? I mean, we see there's a lot of human error on all sides in this process.
You know, I think the human error is actually pretty small, but unfortunately, when it happens on a scale like it did in some areas of this Northern California because of the ballot running out, and obviously L.A., there is obviously concern. But first, let me thank the folks that act as the poll workers there. They're the 100,000 people that make this process work, and we are absolutely grateful for the great job they do, and when they're proactive, that's great. But we do know there are mistakes. Sometimes it's the voter mistake in thinking that they've marked a party or haven't, and we go back and look. Once in a while, it's our mistake, and we're not happy with that. And advice for a voter, you know, think well when you pick your party. The rules change.
Kim Alexander, there are a lot of complications in holding elections, and people's lives are complicated, and there's a lot of hurdles to getting to the polling places. And you do have the option of voting by mail, but you have to think ahead about that and so on. You know, do you have any sense that the way we hold elections just hasn't really kept pace with the level of change in our culture, and that we need to rethink it altogether?
I do think we need to modernize our elections, and I'll take this moment to give a plug to our website at www.calvoter.org, where we have nonpartisan election information available every election season for California voters about what's on the ballot and questions and answers about registering and voting. And we get a lot of use, and it's very exciting. It's very exciting to be a part of the change in democracy through technology, and I've been involved in this for 15 years now, and there are a lot of ways that we could streamline our voting process using technology in a smart way. Implementing touchscreens, that was not a smart way to do it. But having high-tech voting centers with people who are well-trained, statewide voter registration opportunities networked online so people could go to any polling place on election day and vote throughout the state.
Yep.
Those are real possibilities.
Yep, and to be continued. We've got two more elections to deal with in California this year, so the conversation will continue. Thanks to Kim Alexander, president of the California Voter Foundation, and Steve Weir from the California Association of Clerks and Election Officials. Before that, Deborah Bowen, our Secretary of State, and Rick Hassan from Loyola Law School. Forum is produced by Kevin Guillory with production assistance by Tina Lauerberg. Our senior editor is Dan Zoll. Forum's engineer today was Dave Freeman. And our executive producer is Raul Ramirez. For Dave Iverson, I'm Scott Schaefer. Thanks for listening.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Claude and Louise Rosenberg Jr. Family Foundation.